if you have questions, we only do in our way, so we don't need to discuss many. It has nothing to do with you, but it has everything to do with the work that you're doing and the manner in which you're doing it. So we usually do not to say anything personal. Sometimes here we have heated speakers. Okay. It's not about anybody. We usually say it can never be about people treating you this wrong. It's all it has to be about the people that you're presenting. It has to be about the people. Always about the people that we are serving. Because if it is at a point it becomes about us, then there is a serious problem. So in those words, we are welcoming you to the Pretoria Committee, and we are hoping that at the end of this meeting, we'll be having a deeper understanding of the way that you're doing. Are there any apologies?
Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, everyone. We do have apologies from Dr. Kaminzu. She has African history, and Tatumakondo and Mugulu and Tiki. And also have an apology from the Deputy Minister, who is in Tunisia, representing the minister. Who does perform is indeed the Prime Minister.
Observatory, and in addition to that, they also
was followed in 2030 by a mapping study that sought to map the role of arts, culture and heritage within the entire country, looking at provincial spread and so forth. There were very interesting results that came out of that, with arts and culture playing a far more important role in the economy than what we had expected. So one of the reasons for adopting a cultural observatory that would also be to enhance the contribution of arts, culture, and heritage to economic growth, but also to be able to analyze the strengths and the weaknesses of the sector, so that in the future this would be able to inform our policies, but also inform our areas of development. So that in the end, the research work that comes out of this should be able to influence planning, to influence the various work streams within the department, and as you will see later in the presentation, to also have some impact on the revised white paper about the culture. So the idea was to shape the minds of people, but also to uplift the status of the sector and to establish its clear linkages, that it doesn't exist in isolation, but that it has very direct ties with tourism, with education, and so forth. And we also acknowledge that the arts and culture sector, as will be seen with some of these research reports, goes through peaks and goes through troughs and so on. And we need to look at what are the reasons for this. The other thing is that as one of the commitments of the Department of Arts and Culture, we're really trying to seek to measure job creation in the sector, to look at the economic value that our different festivals, from the flagship festivals to other projects of the department, contribute. So part of the work done by the Cultural Observatory has been to look at the economic impact, especially of those projects that take up a bigger budget of the department. So some of the presentations today will dwell on, you know, what has been the impact of these festivals. The Cultural Observatory has also created an economic impact calculator whereby festivals and other sort of arts projects would also be able to measure their own impact in all of this. It's not been an easy exercise, Chair, because you're trying to marry different sort of academic disciplines. You're trying to marry cultural studies, development studies, economics. And somewhere in between all of that is where the Cultural Observatory resides. So the Nelson Mandela Metropolitan University has a contract with the department. I think it was through a tender process. And from 2015, late 2015, the project started. This 3 year of the Cultural Observatory concludes at the end of March 2018, where the research work will be completed. I think it would be interesting to note that one of the concluding projects of the Cultural Observatory is another mapping study, which follows the 2013 mapping study, and it will be interesting to see what the research results are of these projects. But in addition to that, other areas of the department have also made use of the Cultural Observatory, for instance, looking into the whole notion and impact of cultural seasons and the international program of the department as well. I've not gone through every research project, but I think that the presentation will be quite lucid on what the observatory has been doing and what work it continues to do in its concluding phase. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Another thing that you want to ask the observatory opportunity to present the ask questions they have.
From Nelson Mandela University and the South African Cultural Observatory, really welcome this opportunity and honoured by this opportunity to present the activities and to discuss the impact of the observatory on the socio-economic landscape of South Africa, and also more specifically its contribution to the Department of Arts and Culture. So with your permission, I'm going to run a PowerPoint presentation, which has been distributed, the copy of which has been distributed to the members. So the establishment of the observatory, which is DG has pointed out, is an incubation. We're very much in its foundation phase, pretty much a baby, and establishing a research structure, a research initiative, has its challenges. But we've been particularly excited about how this has been embedded and grown within South Africa and also internationally. But its tale begins before that, in 2011, when DAC looked at repositioning the arts, culture, and heritage sectors as core players in the government's program of action. So no longer would you see arts, culture, and heritage as sort of add-ons, but rather as integral parts of the national economy. And that's a fundamental shift. And that represented shifts internationally, where the cultural and the creative economy became recognized not only among the fastest growing, if not the fastest growing sectors, but also as making a real difference to new kinds of economic and development policies, well-being, sustainability, and also offsetting some of the losses in traditional industries, which are continuing to grow. So increasingly and internationally, the culture and creative economy has been very, very important. So this was a significant move by SACA, by the Department of Arts and Culture, to get the SACA initiative going. Apart from the observatory, which as I said is an incubation process, the only observatory which was more Pan-African that existed in Africa was in Maputo. So there's a huge possibility, because internationally, since the late 1980s, the growth of observatory, the establishment, and the increasing importance of cultural economic statistics about the creative economy have been fundamental in new kinds of policies, particularly identified by the United Nations agencies, but also by various governments in terms of public and development policy. So they're very, very central. Anyway, this shift of direction led in 2011-2012 led to the formulation of the Mzansi Golden Economic Strategy. I know the members are familiar with that, which saw the arts, culture, heritage sector as the new gold. So this process, this 2011-2012-2013 process, interacted, as I've said, with a number of international trends in refining the collection and analysis of statistics, particularly on the cultural and the creative economy. So what is SACA? So it's as a project, it's a national research arm of the Department of Arts and Culture, embedded in within the Nelson Mandela University, but also as part of a partnership with two other universities, Rhodes University and Fort Hare. The purpose of developing and supporting the collection and analysis of evidence, influence in policy, sharing insights and building intellectual capacity across the arts, cultural and heritage sector. So it works the breadth of the cultural domains within the kinds of research it does. It's not a public enterprise or business enterprise as defined in the Management Act. It is just, it's a project, and it's in the third quarter of its third and final year, which concludes in 2018. So it's headquartered in Nelson Mandela Bay. But we have our partners at Rhodes University in Grahamstown, Fort Hare, East London, and also we have some of our colleagues. My colleague Mr. Tebby, who's based up in Gauteng, he's the 2IC of the project, so the acting CEO, and my other colleague Nati Lachaba, who sometimes spends time up in Gauteng. She's the research manager of SACA. So the primary objective of the observatory is to advance applied research in the field of cultural and creative statistics and economic data and information systems. So this is increasingly important to refine and improve statistics nationally and internationally. So the better you understand how your economy is operating and the kinds of subsectors and subsectors, the better the economy can government of the day can react and define new policy. Secondary objectives, to support existing or developing information networks and enhancing collaborative research projects between multidisciplinary teams. Third, the other major secondary objectives is to provide support to the sector, becoming a holistic repository, collector and developer of knowledge and information and evidence, considering the structure, context, and dynamics of the sector, particularly with an eye on contributing to employment and sustainable development. So that's a very core consideration in terms of the work you do, will influence policy, identify blockages and impediments in the national economy, particularly with respect to the cultural and creative economy and more generally the arts, culture and heritage sectors. Expected outcomes, firstly to champion evidence to be the primary source of cultural economic statistics and key indicators, to assess the value of the sector and track changes over time, to influence policy, to analyze trends, to inform future policy and resource allocation decisions, and to measure the performance of the sector, and also to benchmark, to allow us to facilitate global comparability, to share insights, to provide accessible knowledge and information, to play a catalytic role of new and innovative research projects. And I'll talk a little bit later about how the research not only has implications for the Department of Arts and Culture, whether on a national or the sub-national levels, but it also has intergovernmental applications. So it has applications for the broader government or broad state. And to build capacity, to reinforce current social capital and to build future social capital. So how are we as an initiative achieving these objectives? So the development of a research agenda for the culture and creative industries of South Africa and the ATH sectors more generally is a core concern. And this research agenda allows us to focus research efforts and resources and enhance the developments of the CCIs and advances policy imperatives of the South African government and its stakeholders. So through a range of processes, through conferences, through our domain workshops, through interaction with DAC, discussion with other entities, we have a very substantive research agenda which is updated and refined on a regular basis, and that's available in the pack of documents. So the research agenda aims to outline and define the art, culture, and heritage sectors and the CCI. We talk about CCI, this is a cultural and creative industries, to define these research areas, to guide research across the sectors and the industries, and to define the individual research items required to address the research requirements of the industry. So to identify areas of potential, areas where there may be constraints, new possibilities, and ways of actually growing these sectors. Importantly, to determine the alignment of the proposed research agenda items with strategic and policy imperatives. A really key point is in our work is to look at this research agenda and to see how we can align it within the parameters of our operation, with a range of the research that we undertake. Importantly too, because research is not just a technical process, it's about inspiring and guiding researchers, it's about developing new researchers for building capacity, and that's a very important part of what we actually do. So the research agenda will be updated again at the end of the fourth quarter. So what we have, the document you have before you, will be updated again through our interaction, through domain workshops, and my colleague Marty has actually been very active in our recent sets of domain workshops across the country, and through our national and international conferences, of which we'll be moving to our third international and national conference, which we're holding in March 2018. So how are we achieving these kinds of outcomes in terms of the research agenda, building capacity, inspiring researchers? One is by awarding scholarships and bursaries. And we do this within a modest way. We don't have unlimited funds. So we look at the ways in which we award scholarships, and we encourage work from emerging researchers within areas that promote understanding of the operations of the cultural and creative economy, and also more generally trends within the ACH sectors. What's happening? How, you know, where are the areas of potential, and how do we link economic activities with broader cultural and creative activities and initiatives? So we expected to award 12 bursaries over 3 years, and to date we awarded 14, with a final call for applications underway. So we've exceeded our mandate. And we've also, for our latest round, we actually had 81 applications. 81, if I'm correct, 81. And we've narrowed that down to 12, which we'll be selecting very, very shortly for our third year of bursary applications. So the bursaries awarded through SACA act as a catalyst to stimulate the development of creative industry analysts, of statisticians, economists, and researchers. And our successful bursary applicants are spread over seven universities, because these are open to all universities. Swanee University of Technology, Rhodes, University of Pretoria, University of Johannesburg, Nelson Mandela University, Cape Peninsula University of Technology, and the University of Witwatersrand. This will be a wider list with our latest iteration. Just to give you some idea of the bursary recipients by race and gender, through those pie charts there. So these scholarships, in a very modest way, within the financial parameters, are building capacity for transformation, as can be seen there. So again, elaborating on how we're achieving these outcomes. Another way is by developing a framework for the monitoring and evaluation of publicly funded art, culture, and heritage. So a lot of our work has actually been focused on looking at international best practice, developing frameworks and developing models. And one of the key contributions, and we'll come back to that, has been the development of an online calculator, an economic impact calculator, which is available to event organizers, organizers of arts, festivals, culture, and other kinds of DAC-funded and publicly funded initiatives. But not only just DAC, but other publicly funded initiatives which can use this online calculator. So in a very real and substantive way, we are finding and making a significant contribution to looking at the impact of funds allocated per the Department of Arts and Culture's Economy Program through a range of monitoring and evaluation reports. These have been undertaken on a quarterly and a yearly basis. So the monitoring and evaluation framework, the substantive framework, a guideline for undertaking this work, demonstrates how the value of cultural festivals and events can be measured under five different themes: audience development and education, human capital and professional capacity building, inclusive economic growth, social cohesion and community development, and reflexive and engaged citizens. So those are the themes, and we look at building these into the evaluations of a range of strategic and selected DAC-funded projects and ACH festivals and events, including the Royal Heritage Festival at Bambi, Suffragan Music Awards, and Dhoni Festival, the Mavorti Craft and Development Project, the Duma Entertainers Youth Dance Event, the Makufa Festival, Festival, the Cape Town Carnival, and the National Arts Festival. After my presentation, possibly during question time, if the chair's indulgence, if my colleague Bernati, who's done some direct work, can discuss that aspect. She'll produce some fascinating insights that have been gathered by us or that we become aware of during that particular area of research. And by the end of the third year, the observatory will deliver a comprehensive evaluation of the Mzansi Golden Economy Program. This is what we are working on at the moment. And we're working in collaboration on this one with the researchers based at the University of KwaZulu-Natal and the Cape Peninsula University of Technology. So we will develop a comprehensive evaluation which will consider all the subcategories of funding, including festivals and events, provincial and national flagships, touring ventures, public art and miscellaneous, as well as make policy recommendations. So that will be a very substantive report and a series of insightful, our strong expectation component reports. Some of the key findings to date of our monitoring evaluation analysis. In the six live events tracked in 2016, for example, the NGEN funding was in the region of 2.25.3 million, and that was organizer spending. Organizer spending at the six events was 129.3 million, and we estimated the combined economic impact on their host economies at 364.63 million. So spending on the arts, culture, heritage sector, has a distinct economic impact and definable multiplier. The total number of attendees ranged from 3,500 to more than 35,000. There's some other information there. But also to make the point that cultural events can play play a role in providing opportunities for intercultural interaction and building social cohesion. So it's not only, ladies and gentlemen and colleagues, about just technical economic impacts, it's actually contribution to, you know, trust such as cohesion and sustaining or building cultural and national diversity, social diversity, and linking these with a range of state imperatives. There's also a positive relationship between cultural participation and individual welfare. This is an increasing part of international research. I mean, there's a big study by Warwick, by Warwick University in 2015, but there's a number of studies which have shown cultural participation and individual welfare has a significant impact on the overall quality of life, as well as thinking about the value of one's cultural heritage. Something I'll come back to maybe during question time is a current initiative that we're working with. A number of French institutions have supported the French Embassy and involves the French Cultural Observatory and the Belgian Cultural Observatory and a number of other participants looking at the whole notion of cultural participation and cultural rights and social cohesion. So that kind of research is really important. And the framework that we developed, the actual framework, the guidelines or the touchstone for our monitoring evaluation, we did six live events. One was the music awards. This is apart from using statistical data. The National Arts Festival, the Ndoni Youth Empowerment Festival, the Kupe Rural Heritage Festival, and our analysis of how we're achieving these outcomes. There's also a range of cultural diplomacy and international engagement activities. We do it in a number of ways. One is by attending international conferences and engagements and building linkages. We most recently have a formal request to the Department of Arts and Culture from the government of Argentina and their cultural observatory. We have historic links in terms of us building international collaboration. So we've had a number of engagements. Argentina, US, Italy, Ireland, United Kingdom, France, China, Spain, and Mozambique. And that's just starting the process. So this is an expanding set of interventions. So it's established relationships internationally, not only with those institutions and the support and support embassies and national cultural structures, but also interacting academic networks. We've also produced a range of documentation, briefing documents in terms of cultural diplomacy. That's been a big growth area. And a number of additional engagements have enabled the observatory to formalize international research networks and partnerships and associated projects. That's a big growth area. And among the recent interactions, the last couple of months have been overseas visits to the UK. We've met with the Creative Industries Federation. We've met with the Observatoire de Politique, de Politique du Culturel, among other structures. Also, we deliver our own national and international conference. We say national, but it's actually international. We attract practitioners, academics, government spokespeople, representatives, a range of relevant stakeholders. So our first and second conference attracted academics from countries such as Zimbabwe, Botswana, US, Zambia, Ukraine, Canada, France, Argentina, United, UK, Poland, Jamaica, Cote d'Ivoire, Uganda, and Kenya. We expect an even larger international participation at the 2018 National Conference, which will be held at the 7th and I don't. But the previous one we held at Johannesburg, we had well over 200 people attending. So we also engaged directly with the arts cultural heritage sectors. Parageways and particularly through a series of national domain workshops, which I've mentioned my colleague Anantia Lachamba has played a key role for the most recent iteration. So we did 9 in the first year, we've done 9 in this year. Also, we run capacity building workshops. So these workshops might be on an introduction to statistics for cultural and creative practitioners. It will be on how to use the online income calculator. It will be on research methodology and practice for cultural and creative practitioners. Those are some of the recent ones. And there's big demand for these workshops. And there's also been requests from DAC entities repeatedly for us to do specific presentations and interventions. So the workshops are held in every province and reach out to remote and previously disadvantaged areas by making use of multi-purpose art centres and townships where it is possible. And these workshops that we run allow the observatory to share research with the sector and importantly to incorporate their priorities into the research agenda. So the research agenda is modified by those, by input from the various workshops as well as discussed at the conference. And these workshops allow us to obtain and record their feedback, and we've had significant feedback. It also informs some of the papers we're working on. One of the key papers that we're working on, my colleague and I, are, for example, looking at trends in the CTIs. And these workshops have played a fundamental role in identifying issues and dynamics that you don't always pick up in the quantitative material. So how do we disseminate information? Very important, how do we actually popularize and interact with our constituencies? One is the Suffragan Cultural website, which if you Google it, it's right at the top of Google. So we've managed to set we've been very fortunate in that, and it attracts quite significant national and international interest. So we've really had over 105,000 page views since its establishment. And over these, and over 76,000 of these are unique views, and over 42,000 users have returned. So in this observatory, it talks about that activity, but more generally, what the Department of Arts and Culture are doing, and it also brings news about local, national, and international events, trends, and issues. And it tracks a range of online interaction, which reinforce networks regarding the creative and cultural activity. In terms of the social media, which has also obliged me to join Facebook, I found a whole range of friends, and I'm not sure whether they're friends or whatever. SACA has reached on average between 30,000 and 50,000 people on a monthly basis. So this is popularizing, profiling the Department of Arts and Culture, of which there are an average of 10,000 engaged fans, people who actively view, share, comment, like, or review our content by visiting the page. And on Twitter, we have SACA has an average reach or impression of 7,000 people per month, and this is growing. In terms of media and public relations activity in the first two quarters, a total average of over 7 million was generated with 167 media hits, and these are not small little ones, they're large ones, and in the business papers, in journals such as New Agenda. We've had a full coverage and leadership, and so on and so forth. SACCA has also received print media, 28 units, broadcast media received 13 units, online media 101 units. We've also contributed to thought leadership, which is provoking national and also international debates about the cultural creative activity, economy, about the arts, culture, and heritage sectors. And these were placed in Class 1 and Tier 1 print media, such as City Press and Business Day, reaching a decision-making audience and influencing and reaching many people across the sectors. We also have a monthly news letter, which is distributed to the SACCA database, which has been partly or significantly informed by a database of the Department of Arts and Culture. And this goes to over 10,000 people per month, and it's also growing, and it's available via the SACCA website. This is just some snippets of how SACCA is making headlines. It talks about the workshops, what culture can mean to growth, creativity, and so on. Culture and creativity at an X factor. So this is promoting the Department of Arts and Culture, showing how central arts and culture are to any future economic and development planning within the country, and development thinking, and also very significantly the contribution to the what's often called these days the fourth industrial revolution. We also deliver research reports which have used inherited mapping and statistical data. We inherited a range of statistical material and mapping data that Department of Arts and Culture passed on to us. We've cleaned up this research. We've developed reports, and we also, as the BDG has mentioned, we also undertaking a whole new mapping study. We also deliver publication reports which relate to the research agenda. Just to give you some idea of the depth and breadth of the publication reports, there are, to date we've delivered 8 publication reports which were consulted with and approved by DAC and available via the SACCA website. We've written on the satellite position paper. And the satellite position paper is actually very important. It's actually looking at the whole question of a satellite account for arts, culture, and heritage. How do we define, you know, more specifically, the sector and subsectors of the ATH economy? We've looked at the role of the CCIs, cultural and creative industries, in regenerating urban and rural economies. We've done a policy-related paper looking at the whole question of the economy of the imagination. That's available in your pack. And along with it, how on a cost-effective basis can one further undergird the cultural and creative industry and sectors within South Africa. We've also done a finalized paper on regional cultural policy with a rural focus. How do we take more direct cognizance policy-wise of what's happening in the rural areas? Bearing in mind the rural areas aren't one unified space. They're different kinds of spaces. They present different kinds of challenges. So our thing will have a small rural base, but a quite significant rural area where you have cultural economic activity. But that will differ quite significantly from certain parts of, say, Mpumalanga or Limpopo. And I was going to say, but I don't want to be seen as too part of it. so that was developed by Forte. And also an independent analyst, Dr. Lawrence Nava. We've got some material on culture and the national interests, the discussion document. Yeah. We've, we've developing in consultation with DAC a framework for their cultural seasons, which is a part of their cultural diplomacy outreach. We've also done an input-output model for the CCR. So we've developed ways of looking at the different kinds of economic activity within the sector. So we can break down, we can say the print media is contributing X amount to the economy. Within the performing arts, these are the measured economic indicators, these are the measured economic trends. We've also developed a paper on the policy mechanisms for cultural diplomacy, and this is increasingly important not only for the Department of Arts and Culture, but also for subject of foreign affairs interaction with a range of national and regional countries, national economies and other regional structures. And cultural diplomacy is an increasing part of interaction internationally. BRICS is very central to the range of our partner countries there. And a number of the developed economies increasingly use cultural diplomacy in their international engagement. So our contribution, not only to the arts and culture, but to state intervention internationally, and those particularly focused around initiatives and interventions with cultural bias or orientation are important. We've also commissioned and will deliver the following reports by the end of the third year. And we'll be looking at emerging trends within the CCR sector. We've talked about that. A paper on how do we rethink culture, a paper on intellectual property. We also have one or two sets of papers in presentation, one being a set of journal articles based on our second conference, and that will be published in the African Economic Review. And then we're also planning a one-day seminar, which we're looking at the interaction between cultural and social theory. So expanding some of the research we've done, so that we've undertaken to date, so they're not only working in a quantitative area, but we've also taken cognizance of national and international thinking about culture, which is important that we understand those dynamics, so that again feeds into broader discussions with the Department of Arts and Culture and its constituent agencies. So these are research reports using mapping and statistical data. And they include measuring cultural employment in South Africa, which is using the UNESCO guidelines and the South African Standard Occupational Industrial Classification Code. This is a very important paper because the Standard Industrial Classification Code looks at the economy or categorizes in a particular way and doesn't quite align with certain international guidelines. So the challenge is how do we better benchmark with UN guidelines. So this is a very significant paper, we think. We've also looked at transformation and job creation in the culture and creative industries in South Africa. And in many ways, the cultural and creative economy is already playing an important role in South Africa. You're looking at over 50% black-owned, you're looking at significant percentage which are owned by women at 40%. You're also looking at a significant component of your cultural and creative industries, which show a fairly high proportion of younger employment, or youth employment, up to 20%. And we're refining these particular figures. So we're also looking at cultural employment in South Africa using new data from Stats South Africa and other kinds of quantitative data that's available. We developed a social cohesion statistical framework and we are in the process of finalising it with internal discussions, both DAC and also the State Department. So it has a barometer, it shows into how we can link with international processes of measuring social cohesion. And through my colleague, Mr. Nguni, we're running a workshop shortly where we're going to look at the methodology that's used out in these studies, and we'll be training officials, certain officials within that and other interested parties there. We've done a product index, so that again is looking at what kind of cultural and creative industry products do we have in South Africa, and it looks at our trade data, and it also looks at the kinds of products and services that we produce and consume. So that again is looking for a more refined analysis of what constitutes the culture and creative economy. So we're looking at ways of disaggregating, describing, refining, and contributing to a clear understanding. And part of that process is through collaboration with STAT South Africa and other partners such as the DTI and also researchers working in these areas. We've done a regional development. We've looked at the regional development of cultural creative industries in South Africa. That was a combination of an Professor Snowball and her student. The student won the South African Economic Prize of the Year for that particular study, South African Economic Society. We're quite proud of that. We've established a statistical framework for the cultural and creative economy. We've done a forecasting model. We've a paper on a forecasting model, doing forecasting trends and developments within the creative economy. Performance and celebration mapping study, visual arts and crafts mapping study, and design and creative services mapping study. So these are the reports that we've delivered and consulted and are available via our website. And by the end of the third year, we'll develop a micro mapping study in a series of 6 research reports, 2 of which have already been completed, including a cultural and creative industry employment report and international trade and cultural goods. So again, that's contributing to understanding of the cultural economy. The reports in development at the moment, which will be ready or delivered by the end of the fourth quarter, March 2018, will be looking at the shifting ownership and transformation of the economy, looking at provinces, locations, and clusters, what's happening at a spatial level. There'll be a macroeconomic report looking at the broad trends, and there'll be a summation report which takes into all consideration the policy implications and the findings of the preceding reports, and that will constitute the overall mapping report. Among the key research findings, and these are ongoing, and they're not exhaustive. Would be the employment and cultural creative industries. So in 2015, cultural employment occupations made up 2.5% of all employment in South Africa, meaning it's the third largest source of employment. And this is probably a slight under-enumeration. This was a growth on the 2014 figures that we inherited from the 94 study. So that's actually showed growth despite tricky economic situation. And if you include non-cultural support occupations, for example, say, designers working in a car factory, or so on and so forth, the CCI employed 4.2, cultural dependency, 4.2% of all those who had a job in 2015. And as we refine our data, as we work more closely with the department, with Stats South Africa, we are probably going to get even closer and possibly higher figures now. But also very importantly, as part of this process, defining new ways of looking at reinforcing In some of the large economies, and economies which have put significant emphasis on copyright, of intellectual property, contribution to GDP has risen significantly. In some cases, you know, in and around 10%. Anyway, but altogether, the cultural economy can account for, and this is according to our most recent report from Professor Snuggle and her collaborators from Rhodes University, an estimated 6.72% of all employment in South Africa. The visual arts and crafts domain makes up 52% of CTR occupations in South Africa. The next largest domain are books, information and press and design, and creative services. And again, we're using UNESCO classifications of the CTR. 19%. Most cultural programs found in Gauteng, KwaZulu-Natal and the Western Cape. And then cultural clusters, using a particular methodology, and this is more, these are spatial ones as opposed to institutional ones, can be seen in the visual arts and crafts domains in Limpopo, KwaZulu-Natal and the Eastern Cape. And these have, in many respects, a rural orientation. Another valuable piece of research is a research report which looks at our trade and cultural goods and services with a focus on our BRICS partners. So that we found, for example, the visual arts and crafts domain is an important contributor to cultural goods and export growth. That there's a positive trade balance in the cultural and natural heritage domain. That South Africa has extremely high cultural goods trade imbalances with China and India, with imports much greater than exports. This is something we certainly can look at redressing. That visual arts and crafts, books and press, and cultural natural heritage are the most important export domains for cultural trade with Brazil. That cultural natural heritage and visual arts and crafts are the most important export domains for China. That visual arts, crafts, and performance are important domains for India, and so on. So those are very important trade implications, and allows us to look at how we revision and reposition our economic emphasis. We talked about the South African Festival of Economic Calculator. This is available online. It's an online tool developed by us specifically for cultural festival and event organizers, so they can track the economic impact of their events. And we're going to be running one for the National Film and Video Foundation. We've been running a number of them more nationally. And it's a tool designed to estimate the economic impact of a festival and a host economy. Not only after a festival, but also before. And it can be quite a very important tool in applications, the application process for that funding. So be carefully and conservatively designed to produce results that are as reliable and valid as possible with a wide range of events. And in this process we worked with one of the international academics and also Professor Jed Snowball. In many respects, she's played a leading role in this. So there's a lot of national interest and excitement, and also growing worldwide. Willingness to look at using this. We're also busy with socioeconomic impact assessment of the 2017 white paper as part of our growing commitment of the white paper and arts, culture, and heritage. And I'll ask Mike again with the chair's indulgence and during question time, my colleague Jibuta Satebi, who manages the team up in the Gauteng, and we've made significant progress on that particular exercise. So there are challenges in the way forward. One of our major challenges, and most sector research agencies, this is internationally, it's a well-known challenge. There were delays of contracting and getting the funding and so on and so forth, and a number of the people had to work on risk, but it all worked out very well. So the establishment of research infrastructure, Creta Lag, which was addressed in year one of operations. Some existing databases did not meet the quality and research criteria, which we necessitated us cleaning and developing new databases. 3 years, in fact, less than 3 years, is a short time to build an institution. So we're still at our foundation phase, although we think we've achieved a good deal of the outcomes. The way forward is to complete mapping studies by March 2018, to conclude all deliverables as per agreement with that. We set ourselves internal deadlines of trying to get the bulk of it done by December. Host a national conference in, that should be March 2018, and complete a three-year review. And also, there are a number of other achievements. One of them we undertook a mid-year review, and we stopped fairly late. This was undertaken. The university contracted Mazars, which is an international accounting and auditing firm, and they gave us a 99.5% review, which we were very proud of. Yeah. So we were pleased by that, and we've been particularly excited at the way we've found a growing set of interactions between ourselves, stakeholders, both national and international players. But there are so many new challenges, and we've really enjoyed the work we've done. And we think in a number of ways we benefit from our partnership. And we are part of that, but I mean, we benefit from our interaction, from the work of our project manager, and also we've just met so many new kinds of stakeholders at the domain workshops, at the conferences, through personal interaction, through our international interaction. There's so much goodwill and international interest in the observatory project. I think it's actually, I think it was a marvelous part of the ESG strategy, and I think that the government really needs to be supported this initiative, and it should, given in our estimation, it should go far. Thank you. We wanted to know if the contribution of us is. And if SFA was saying that they couldn't provide us with the answer. And as the proposal committee, this is information that has been seen from the answer. Because you can't spend money and not know what the impact. That's their expenditure. So I think
first question is to the creative. Okay, this is a project. And a project for the beginning. And what are your thoughts after you have seen what is happening, what the project has achieved, what the project is doing, and what they have achieved? Now, what are the thoughts of the beginning? And the department and what value is this project adding to the work that we do? Because from our experience as a portfolio committee, there are areas within the department where you see, you know, people just walk up and say, this just happened in this bedroom, and they do it without any data, without any research, but people just felt that this should happen. So I think the department can tell the committee that this project is adding value in the work that we are doing.
Thanks, Chair. Maybe for the department, I'm going to answer your first question. It might help us to move forward, but I'm also interested in terms of the tenure. Since the project, how long are they executing that in terms of the project? Remember, in the document here, it says that the initial process of kicking off establishing the operator was started as early as 2011. But then 4 years later, it was only established in 2015. So I really have questions. Why on the length of it, how long is it going to take? Because it took long to establish it while the initial thinking of the establishment of the process was as early as 2011. I don't know what I should say. Perhaps after your first question, then we can move with our questions from there.
Okay, thanks. And you know what the committee's concern is on the honorable colleague is saying that the department is working at a snail's pace in everything they do. And I've said it to Lisa even this morning, that we have a non-responsive department, a department that does not respond timely to issues. And this is one thing that, as the Portfolio Committee, we found in this department. Can you then respond to the question so that honorable members can come forward and ask other questions and make comments?
Thank you, Chair. I think the first part of the question was, what are our thoughts as the department, given the results and outcomes of this research agenda, the research projects that have taken place thus far? I think the first important point is the one around the value of art, culture, and heritage. You know, for too long, the department has been regarded as the Department of Entertainment. And now, for the first time, over an extended period of time, are we beginning to really see and map out this particular contribution, which is vast, which has linkages which the department itself should fully understand. If you look at the way the department is currently organized and ordered, it's been very driven by, in the arts and culture section, for instance, around sector-specific interventions. But what you're clearly seeing here is that even sectoral interventions go far beyond that. That in fact, a clustered approach and interventions that seek to bring various clusters together are far more important. So as the department is currently engaged in a sort of work study process around scheme of resources. I think one of the outcomes and interventions of looking at these different case study results is to sort of realign the work of officials in the department and the actual need out there and the development and the artistic and cultural trends that are taking place. So for instance, it's clear that even as we have, for instance, a multimedia directorate within cultural development, that there has to be real linkages not only with, let's say, the film industry or the video industry, but also broader developments within ICT. So I think the first sort of impact of this is the starting of the department, what each individual does, but how to sort of have a more effective and more efficient administration, not just by project management or process mapping, but also by understanding that we are more connected than we are apart. So I know the department has also always been accused of silo mentalities. And I think what we've seen here is the importance as we sort of restructure the department to get outside those silo mentalities and look more at connections rather than divisions between branches. So for me, that's the first impact that it has. But secondly, if you look at the branch of arts, culture, promotion and development, in the last 2 months, we have started a process of trying to overhaul or revise, if I can put it maybe more mildly, the whole NGE strategy and how it works. So that the emphasis should be more on projects that are able to be sustained and sustain themselves rather than one-off annually cultural events which tend to promote more seasonal work than ongoing work for artists. So we started the process whereby we are reworking the NGE strategy as it is. Yes, we are putting sort of efficiency mechanisms in place, but we're also looking at it very differently now, you know, as you can see with the results of some of these reports. I mean, one of the concerns of the department has been, if you look, for instance, at national and provincial flagships, some of these projects have been supported by the department, well, let's say for more than 15 years or even 18 years. And the question is, based on this information, how do we effectively manage exit strategies from these projects? And what some of this data also helps to show us is where should the interventions be whereby we're starting to support new projects on a much larger level, because there has to be a graduation. As young artists or people interested in the arts enter the system, let's say through community art centers, through artists in schools projects, how do they sort of graduate from there to the debut program, to NGE, to flagships and beyond? So this also helps to offer us the kind of mapping that we need to sort of embark upon those processes. There are also sector strategies that are being developed inside the department, and this information is very valuable around the development of specific sector strategies, as you can see with the sort of craft areas that are being spoken about there. So certainly in the future, Chair, funding should not be what some would say the hit and miss or is it hit and run approach, but a far more objective and scientific approach of what needs to be funded. The fact is that, you know, the reference has been made to the fact that this notion of a cultural observatory started in 2011. But I know that within the department it started way before then. 2008-2009, there were already workshops around cultural statistics. So I think it's just taken a long time to develop into prepared to put funding into it so that the department has a strong research arm. And Chair, we do acknowledge the slow pace of sort of funding and responses to funding within the TIC department, but we also believe that with informed analytics of what we're seeing here today, we are confident that we will be able to effect an overall and diverse sort of increase, both increase but also qualitatively increase the economic and social impact of the arts in people's lives.
Something that we need over a period of time.
it's not something that you say the church will stop one day and then they won't be the church moving forward. We need agriculture, where our teacher was saying agriculture needs this research unit or research entity. Other than all of these other entities that are not making sense to me, Chief Minister, I felt that this one is really making sense to me, because even the work that is sanctioned for them to do, it's not a work that they can complete over a period of 3 years if you really need to write business. 3 years is totally fixed. Because for the first year, for example, they have to prepare themselves, you have to establish whatever that they are going to use. Actually, I commend them for this part that they have developed a lot of things up until DFS. So, I don't know, maybe the person, some of the questions will take them when the department engage with them on this issue. I wouldn't want us to maybe complete it today and say, yeah, we have concluded about them. We are not going to take it further. When the PG is here, the minister is here, the city minister, all of them are here. Because this is, to me, this is very important. It's very, very key and it's very important. So, I mean, not a little bit convinced with the explanation and the answer, the long answer that has been given here. Secondly, the other thing here that I was wondering, how much is being given in this project? Because it's not there in the presentation. I tried some of the documents I couldn't open online on my emails. I struggled to open some of the documents. Maybe perhaps it's there in some of the documents which I struggled to open over the weekend. So, but if it's there, they can still tell us how much of the position for this project. And perhaps the university should also tell us that in their view, was the amount commissioned enough for the work that they had to deliver to the self-assessment at the end of the project. Chair, I'm very happy, although some of the reports I know, it only says reports are going to be issued after the end of the 3 year, the end of, I would have loved to have had a lot of reports, but it's understanding the nature and perhaps the nature of the contract, one has to live with some of the reports that you will get them at the end of the contract. We don't even know you'll be there by that end of the contract, because we would have loved to ask questions about those reports to you directly, because it's a work that has been done by you. But then, Chair, let me come to, although you've got a very beautiful document, but it does not have pages, it's very difficult to go through it. So I thought people who are very educated, you know that the page one should be there. Some of us, we come from the old school of thought where you believe in pages, you have to go through the document when you have pages. So it really makes some, the page are paying numbers. Next time you must try by all means to do that. Let's come to the key monitoring and evaluation report findings. Okay, I felt that perhaps this is not adequate for me as a person, because I would have loved when they say the combined impact on their host economies is 364.363 million. I would have loved to know about Maputo, because I come from Maputo, and I'm very interested in knowing the residents said, the impact. Actually, the residents said to me, I don't know that much, impact to the actual people, which are the artists. So maybe perhaps we can get a presentation or something that will tell us per event, all those six, are the six events that are there, all those six events, and we know this one is like this, this one is like this. Because I remember at one stage, while I was still in the province, and the minister was in Mamadou Soumane, she once said that Maputo is a fiscal group. So, but maybe perhaps the research can elaborate more, will give me more of an insight. Why is it over time that Maputo will have to be abandoned somehow? Based on what was said at that time, why was it called a fiscal group? Because I live in Bloemfontein. I see my really, really benefiting out of the money that is spent there, or the person who is the organizer is the one that is taking a chunk of money out of that. Then perhaps we at time move on. We might not have it now, but within your stage one, it's really okay. I'm sure that's the vision and that's the reason why we open it up. Some of us, we are paperless, we don't like to take us, so we depend on everything. But if it's there, thank you very much. I'll go through it, I'll check it on my status whether I'm really interested in that. And also, maybe perhaps on the issue of using social vocation. Maybe perhaps also the response it does explain whether I'm really. Because it's an outcome of our government. Social community relationship is the outcome of our government. And that's what we need to measure ourselves. Whenever we are doing impact, we need to measure against whether we are achieving the nation building or together with social cohesion. So, Chair, I was very much interested because at times they would refer you to the website. I went to the website. And by the way, your website is very good. It's very good to support, and I was interested in, I saw that you talked about it here, your free online tool that tracks the economic impact. I don't know the ETF or something like that. But I could not go through it because I'm a little bit challenged. I'm a little bit devout because the moment I struggled a little bit because I really wanted to get inside it and be able. Maybe you really access me before you leave after the meeting on how, because I want to track myself, your work, track whatever that you have uploaded in your website. I find you the website check very easy to get through it, to read whatever that is there. Then I was attracted with the current situation within in your website where I was putting the document and everything. There was a clause there within where it talks about you, who are you, and then where are you now. When you start talking about the current situation, say the research is not compatible. Can you elaborate that more to me? Or it says the research is not compatible and there is insufficient, inadequate, and unscientific data for many areas in agriculture and health systems. I would love to have more insight on that. That's what I got in your website. It's not in the document that is here. So I would love really to get more of an understanding about that issue. And then on the issue of the last issue, I think on the boundaries, you said that you are supposed to give out 12 boundaries in 3 years. Is it in a period of 3 years, or I do not understand whether the 12 boundaries, is it per year? It's not stating clearly to me whether it's per year you issue out to 12 students, whether it's a cycle within 3 years, but I could see that you have worked even beyond your expectation. You went further as 14 boundaries. And also, I was very impressed that the gender shows that women lead. African culture cannot succeed in that. African culture is fast in it. Okay, no. I know what the question is. The next one is what I'm saying. So I'm very much interested. But also, Chair, I was a little bit sad because the universities were all mentioned, but the university they were offered was not mentioned. I was really interested also. What is going on? Have you tried to look at the doors of the university? If you have tried and you failed, you I can be your ambassador there at the university. Thank you, Chair. Thank you so much. It's a very good question. I welcome the presentation, Chair. We have been waiting for you. Oh, the last thing on the on the white paper. It's saying you are currently conducting an independent social economic assessment of the white paper. On the research of the department. But I would want you to know before what you are doing now, have you been part, have you contributed to the current white paper as it is before you have been commissioned to do this? Because you already, even I assume that even before you were given the opportunity to do this research, you have been doing very well in cultural issues at the university now. Or even in whatever organizations that you are in, have you contributed in the current form of the white paper on African culture? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. thing that we also maybe just asked was about the that you just briefly touched on. A number of years ago, I asked the question at the provincial department, and I don't pick it up in this research, and that is, how much money did Festival A and Festival B contribute to the success? Now, the answer at the time is that the Department of Arts and Culture is not an income-generating department. However, proceeds were taken at the gate, and those proceeds vanished between the gate and the department. So I wonder who's keeping track of that one. The other question that begs answering is that I see you report wonderfully on the jobs being created within the sector. However, the annual reports for the Department of Arts and Culture do not reflect the same rosy picture in terms of jobs being created. So I don't know where the department loses out, or it means maybe that the department doesn't have tracking mechanisms to determine the number of jobs being created. And it brings me then to say that then what they say in terms of jobs created in the annual report is thumb-sucking, and this one would have more truth in it. And I think I still have a number of questions, but I think the other one that my colleague asked referred to the input being made to the white paper. I am not aware of any public engagement going on around the debate, and then around the white paper. And then finally, I see you have hosted a national conference in March 2017. I don't know where that was, and this committee. I don't know whether we were informed or we know about this conference on our sector that took place. With government money, and I think, and that is why when the onwards already always want to go to these events to see that they are happening, so that we have an inside view of what is actually happening within the sector.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm a member of the Arts and Culture Committee because it's important for me and I'm interested in this. That's why we make contribution as a goal of us on this committee. I also know from my experience, and I might be wrong, that art and culture is in a certain sense a luxury. In the sense that the economy goes down, that's one of the first things that we start losing because people have not survived and then need some extra. And that's like a question we are at the moment in South Africa as far as I'm concerned. The specific question maybe on the bursaries as well. I certainly share my own interests. I'm also chief from the Free State. I'm from North West University. I was a professor there. I don't see them anywhere. But I know it's not that easy. My question would be, I'm not sure the bursaries as such is it for specific research, is it just helping somebody in his research, and how do you define the area, is it research in certain subjects, is it research in the area that can help? I know research is very important out there for students, and therefore it's possible that it's been done. But the question that is, how does it fit in here to make sure it makes a contribution in the end of the day? Secondly, on the festivals, it seems quite interesting, this booklet. I haven't time to read it, Special Economic Impact Calculator. But surely, being in the arts and culture sector, as a professor, I need to attention of my old
question is very important, that they give the answers after the economic impact. And we always need those answers to argue these things, and that's very big contribution they're doing to help you to argue this. That's a question because it fascinates me. Any specific reason why these four, five were elected for research? I think it covers quite a broad terrain. I tried to explain to you that for the successful national artificial cast iron car, fascinated to give it glory even, and then to be able to say, look, that big impact, all the sectors might go, whatever, but it may be just a research question why they focus only on those. And then the last issue, is the one that also mentioned by you and by my colleague on my left, a project of the department to have it get the amount yet. And then I'm not sure what the PFSA says about the project, what's the rules about the project. I think that's the question at the end of the day. It's a 3-year project, it ends in the end of the day, it's complicated. There will surely be an argument to say, can't the department do it in the house? It's always that must be outside. An argument outside is more objective. We get a better opinion, but that will be the type of argument. Specifically in the time of budget cuts that come up. And then specific for the people here, I suppose they did get the infrastructure, permanent infrastructure in a sense. I'm not sure how big that is. People that have got jobs now after 3 years, and that complicates the issue if you go for another 3 years. Surely when you compete with other, you would have an advantage, and I think that's fair, because you already did the job and you've got something to prove. But I'm always worried, 3 years in a sense, what happens to the people when the project goes now to my university, for example. What happens to the people back there? And is there other way to do it? Or is there other way according to the rules of the previous aid in a certain sense? And just for instance, the people here, we met them, the names, but I would like to get some background to them, and it helps me to understand why they're involved in this and what contribution they make if they have asked them this work. Thank you.
Thank you,
Thank you.
Further points, but the not per university. It's just actually we actually look at the range. We have a committee that assists and we evaluate the various and we try and get a regional spread and look at some kind of geographical spread. But we don't quite have the resources that a substantive funding body like the NRF will have. So we look at that supplementary. So that's on the budgetary on the budgetary aspects of the bursaries. I mean the bursary aspects. In terms of the conference that Mr. Griffin raised. Is it on? Am I getting it right here? the conference actually, I think that's the time. It should be March 2018, and we've done invitation via our database, you know, which we've used from DAC and we've grown ourselves. So if the portfolio committee hasn't received special invitations to previous ones, we will certainly ensure that there are, and we very much like to have members of the committee here. So we'll certainly make sure for the forthcoming one, which is March 2018, we'd be really happy to have one or more or all of you guys there. That would be worthwhile. Why the choice and the if I can just raise some of these questions because they emerge on the festival. We've chosen the festivals because the ones we've chosen have also been the DAC's request, and they've generally flagship the larger ones because that's where more of the spending goes around here. But currently, the information that we receive from DAC and also other information that we get, we look at the overall spend, and then we are doing economic impact assessment of it. So the final report will actually look at the Mozambique Golden Economy spending, and we will hopefully come up with a substantive assessment for the committee on the economic impact of the spend. Definitely, I mean, the indications are that the spend, the spending will have broader economic implications. That there will be a multiplier at work here. And in terms of cultural employment, it is an area where you can spend and you can get reasonable returns as long as it's not too much duplication of effort. I mean, you're all double dipping and so on. So those are some of the areas that one needs to look at. That one particular event, no, whatever, may receive multiple funding applications or inputs. So it's actually making sure that there's optimal use of relatively scarce resources. So that is part of the challenge. The question of jobs created, which differs between our reports, and then our reports just filtering through, and DAC's official reports, there probably would be that DAC would in the annual report may be looking at jobs specifically created by their interventions, as opposed to jobs created more generally within the arts cultural sectors, and also the arts culture, festivals. So there may be a different set of criteria, but there's certainly scope for us to work to ensure that the information is directly inputted into DAC reports. I don't think that's the problem, but I think there are different. It may be a case of apples and pears in terms of the reporting there. I'm not sure of the category, but we certainly sort that out. Road trips, budget cuts. There is an issue, a challenge there, but it's also a future opportunity which I can return to later. But I just wondered, through the chair, with your indulgence, there are some issues that I can talk further. Maybe my colleagues could say a few words.
Can I outsource?
Yeah, thank you. The unscientific data on the website at one specific point there, that's what I was looking at. I think the reference was that quite a bit of data that's either inherited by us, whether it's survey data, and there are some problems with the survey data. All these data that is available, even via Stat South Africa, you have your international processes of classifying the different sectors in the cultural and creative economy. So that particular process, if you look at the United Nations classification and you look at the Stat South Africa, there's significant difference. And also you don't always find your categories for your cultural and creative industry workers within current Stat South Africa classifications. And we've discussed that, we've had a number of discussions with them, and they are amenable to us incorporating questions in the future of their quarterly interventions, whether it's household, their household data, or their tourism data. But we've also suggested in the satellite position paper that we consider the possibility of setting up a satellite account for the cultural and creative economy, which will give us a lot more specific information, but it also allows us to benchmark a bit more directly with international classification and criteria. But that itself there's still some confusion at the international level, but that would actually improve that particular aspect.
Thank you very much. My name is Mr. Wumi. I'm from the Department of Arts and Culture. I'm a deputy director and I am a researcher by qualification in research and policy, but then extra studies and also running my scope looking today, which looks at the broader scope in terms of management, and currently I'm looking at the climate strategic intervention in order to optimize the performance of the communities that are looking to go up. That is the current study that I'm looking at. That is an on an academic side. But then again, maybe to add the contribution based on why, because I think that's the question people are coming up. Why is the department decision in response, taking time to respond to some of the issues that have been raised or questions people have? But I'll respond directly in relation to the Qatar incident, because I was part and parcel of the process that led to the sanctuary of the Qatar incident, and the pressure led to the development of the MGP strategy. I was part and parcel of that. I think what the Qatar had during the recommendation, I think the consultants that were involved in the research, they had the conversation for establishment of the Qatar project. And I think we also realized the need for the Qatar project, as I mentioned, to measure the performance of, for instance, of the MG project. But I think then they were called for the conceptualization for Qatar project by the department. I think that's also a challenge to try to understand what role the trial in the Qatar project would do. And then I think that took time for the department to understand. Though there were some officials with the department understood, but I think that here kind of disjunction created, contributed to a delay, particularly from, I'm saying this, particularly from the top management side, because you will find that each of Qatar was a bad way at one level. But if you go to the high level, kind of, you do not hear much about it. Until very late, and other officials came in and they realized the importance of that Qatar problem. So I think that in my view, that was the kind of contribution and delay in the structural development. But then in the issue of the, maybe to add to what Professor said, this discrepancy between the statistics created by the department and by the report, I think that also is what explained in this document. I mean, this document I'm looking in. And the numbers here, when you put down the number 5, there's a report there on unemployment, page 10. Isn't that page 10? Because if you look at it, there is a model there that is being provided. It says the creative printers. And it's page 10. If you look there, there are three processes that was there. The first step is self-employed in creative occupation in the creative industry. You know, that artist working in the creative industry, that is one. And then employed in support occupation in the creative industry. For example, people like financial managers and other people who are employed in the creative sector, in the creative industry. And then the last one, the employed in creative occupation in others. Now those are the architects who are also employed in the motor industries, not even in the So the analysis of this process, we have to ask the process, at which level is this process, and the process is analysis done? Is it done? Process in the Department of Agriculture, we have to be looking at the assets for the creative industry, but also because we're looking at the contribution of the person, Amelia. The employment is in the sector. So we're looking at artists who are also working in the industry, but also people who are not artists, but also employed in the creative industry. So that's an employment that's happening in the sector. But then the last time we also look at other creative artists who are also employed in other industries. So that analysis is done within that perspective. So I think it's also important that when we look at it, we look at what we're doing. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Njabulo Sintebe. My background in training, I'm an economist with over 15 years experience, and this is not the first project that I worked on with the university. My previous project with the university was on agriculture and economy, climate change. So this has been an interesting project to work on. Chair, I would like to give a response to our contribution to the white paper process. We were not part of the drafting of the current white paper. We're not part of the drafting team. Our job was specifically to do the socio-economic impact of the paper as it stands. We are from time to time in discussion with the panel that is drafting the white paper, particularly to study on various things that are contained in the paper. But a direct answer, no, we're not part of the white paper drafting.
My name is Maxine Chama, and also from the response to the scholarship which we have awarded since the inception of the project. Like the presentation has indicated, and Professor Richard Haynes has said, that we were supposed to allocate 12, but then we ended up allocating 14. And yesterday, just before we traveled to the Western Cape, we sat and reviewed applications which we have received for this year. I'm raising this to both Dr. Muller and Bonnie, who are from the Free State and are very concerned about the Free State not being featured as part of the beneficiary for the scholarship. We have not received scholarship applications from the Free State. We have extended the invitation because the ad is spread out nationally. We're using the mailing garden. We communicate with all the universities in South Africa. And surprisingly, yesterday we did receive an application, just one, from Free State University, and it was a doctoral student. But now the challenge is, she is based in the UK. That's number one. Two, she has not attached all the documents which are supposed to accompany the application. Now, as we are all aware that anyone that is applying for whatever funding, there are requirements that they need to meet according to the ad. And she just submitted the application form and the academic record and all the accompanying documents. So we also do not know whether she is South African or she is from the UK but studying with the University of Free State. Because one of the requirements of the scholarship is that it has to be awarded to South African students. So, but we will communicate the outcome with the applicants by the end of this week, the 10th of November, is to implement the scholarship. So if we would gladly accept the invitation from Sis Bongile to Canvas on our behalf in the first place so that more students can apply for our funding when we issue out the funds. And also on the issue of the economic impact calculator, it's actually quite very easy to use this funding. Recently we've just received a request from the National Film and Video Foundation to actually come and do training on the economic impact calculator, because part of the deliverables during our domain workshops which we conduct nationally is that we introduce the tool, but due to limited time, we cannot take them through the calculator because it requires at least a day or two for people to actually learn thoroughly as to how to use the economic impact calculator. So people have an idea of what the calculator is able to do and how they can actually maneuver it. But then if there is a specific request that comes, whether from the portfolio committee or from any department or from any of the DEC entities, for the observatory to come and conduct training, so to get, so we will be happy to assist them.
Thank you very much. And I think there was a question that was asked on the impact of this festival on artists themselves. So I think it's important to, you go to some of these festivals and find that artists from that particular area do not benefit anything from the festival. Everybody else benefits, but artists don't benefit. So I think it's important that the department looks at that very well. In fact, during the weekend, I was talking to an artist that was telling me that this whole area here in the Eastern Cape, we don't benefit anything as the ordinary artists. And I think this is one thing that the department should look at to ensure that whenever you give out money, the artists, the local artists,
your crowd cooler, but not have money going to all those oil and gas people, but your ordinary up and coming artists should benefit from that. So I think that is important. And I was going to say, which is the economic impact has made? I think it would benefit us as a portfolio community, but we only have a year to go now. But we will talk about it, and maybe it can assist us even in the future, for us just to be able to do this, even after our 10 and the empowerment to us. Because when we go to our communities and work with the community, we are able to do this, you know, to ensure that we understand how any activity, you know, in our constituencies now impacts on our communities. Do you want to have the last question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll say a few words. Again, to speak on the Free State University, we actually planning a workshop with looking, I mentioned it earlier, looking at the interaction between culture and social theory, and the Free State philosophy department would be one of the areas that our first port of call, because they've been equipped with work on theorizing culture. So they would be among the people invited to this particular specialized workshop. And we've expanded our networks quite significantly, but not necessarily comprehensively. It all takes time within southern universities and beyond. I was in France and England recently on this engagement, and we actually had a meeting with, which would be facilitated by the French Institute for the French Embassy, and this was the University of Toulouse, and we are part of the application for EU funding for a multi-country multi-country study of cultural rights, which is related to cultural participation and social cohesion. So Brazil, France, Belgium, UK, South Africa would be quite an interesting study. The networks that one's establishing, not only nationally but internationally with universities, and a number of other universities international we are going to work with, and that again pulls in other South African universities. So the university networks is quite a cost effective way, particularly if there's a funding stream going on. There are also significant policy implications, you know, from research. You do research and produce quite a range. There's some significant policy and the DFG and the project and a range of us have noted these, and we're looking at some ways of starting to concretize these policy implications and realize it. The one of them being the running of a workshop, bringing DAC along with provincial local players and other interested parties. And we have an interesting number of one or two of the overseas observatories who work on that cultural policy get them to participate as well. And one of our findings is that by improving some of the institutional structures, institutional support for the sector, you are going to improve the operations of that sector more generally and have spin-offs. So one of them would be looking at greater horizontal and vertical integration of within the DAC group of families, but also intergovernmental. Because, again, very briefly, a number of issues related to the cultural creative economy involve other departments quite significantly, like the DTI and the IDCs and the NGT, even public works, even defense. If I can just give you one little snippet that I was invited to talk on defense industries, which are related to the new industrial strategy, which are related to the whole question of innovation in the high-tech industry and how do we keep it. And Nancy, myself, and one or two colleagues are working on the trends in cultural and creative industries. And four of the mega trends, one of them is actually artificial intelligence, the other is augmented reality, the other is virtual reality, like gaming and things like that. And the fourth is blockchain, which is this encryption that you can find in things such as PayPal, Bitcoin, Ethereum, and so forth. And it's funny, I was talking to the defense industry, and I said, interestingly, in South Africa, if you're looking for people who, or companies that are working in those domains, you find them in the defense industry. But internationally, a lot of those kinds of domains are concentrated in, you also find them in the creative economy. And it's not too surprising, because there's a lot of shift from people working in defense to ITC, which is a knock-on effect. A knock-on effect in terms of or a spillover from certain sectors of the economy to other sectors of the economy. So, and work done in the cultural and creative economy can benefit other aspects. So this interaction between sectors in the economy and this interaction between governments more multi-party processes is very important. And the point was also raised about the question of future funding and future funding cuts. And again, when I was going overseas, when I was my recent overseas visit, there have been quite a bit of cuts at regional and local level in terms of the ATH sectors. And increasingly, they were looking at partnerships and public-private partnerships. And I was noticed that Honourable Minister Gigaba in his speech was going back to the old Treasury public-private partnerships as an important way to look for more cost-effective, for want of a better word, or cutting back on some of the drain on state resources. And those kinds of issues, I think, and those kinds of pressures are coming through some of our policy documents and policy implications in our research, and I think will inform not only the deliberations of this committee, but more, government policy making more generally. So what's happening within the Department of Arts and Culture network is actually going to have a broader impact on new sectors and new ways of looking at employment and sustaining employment.
Thank you very much. Another quick problem, if you want to say something before you say that, I think it's important also for the department to look at integration within the department, because they themselves are working in silos within the department. You have really gone out, you are within the department, and they are working in silos. And I think it's important for them to look at the way they are operating and to see how they can assist the society more effectively by being integrated within. And when you go outside the department, the department belongs to the social cluster, but as you are rightly saying, art and culture is more than just a social, thing. There is a lot of economics there. It can belong to the economic cluster, because it has to deal with policy, it has to deal with other things that are outside the social cluster. So I think your research can assist the department to begin to look at how they can also be included in the economic cluster, so that they are able to argue their case within the economic cluster. Because it's not just about, not everything is just social. The
the only question that has not been answered is the one concerning your perspectives or perception about the new white paper or the envisaged white paper on arts and culture.
From our point of view, we've been engaged to undertake a socio-economic impact assessment, which is actually in a methodology and approach prescribed by the Department of Marketing, by the DPME. So that's what we're going through, and we've actually made progress in it. My colleague, Cecily, can actually maybe give a little bit more detail on that particular process, but we've actually made good progress so far on that, on that particular government prescribed process. So we, as I said, we're not part of the review process, but we're actually undertaking this impact assessment in the manner prescribed by the DPME. If I can ask my colleague to...
Yeah, but I don't know what the...
Okay, you can get that information.
Yeah.
Through you, Chair. I think what we are in a position to say is that we are currently in discussion with the DPME, and we are looking at the gaps of the current white paper, that are the methodology that's prescribed by the DPME. So once we've addressed the gaps, then we'll be in a position to say whether, in our view, this white paper fits in with the prescribed standards.
If I may, but then again, that approach is again a silo kind of approach, because it's like looking at it from one view, because there are other impacts within that white paper that you are not looking over and one person to the other. So maybe you should then again interrogate that white paper in its current form, so to be able to make an informed assessment of it. Maybe you have to relook at it, and maybe between yourselves have a discussion on it, and then maybe also give us input from your perspective.
From a technical assessment point of view, things that we need to study in a month in terms of the social economic impact, that's just a small part of a bigger project. So once we've done it, we'll feedback to the department, and we'll feedback to the DPMP, because there's a two-and-flow process between ourselves and the DPMP. Then the department will then engage with the draft and say these are the things that you need to address. And I'm not in a position to really give to the committee a solution on exactly which state the problem is so, but technically on the social economic impact, we think we will start to improve the problem.
Is there a problem? If there is a problem, Oh, that was like...